This is Cave Scott Allen of OTCode.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Hi, this is John with a quick word from our new sponsor, JetBrains. Need more continuous integration support than Team Foundation Server is giving you? Want to work with other testing and coverage tools that aren't necessarily focused around MS test? Want to use Git or Mercurial for source control? Why not try out Team City? Team City integrates with a wide variety of build tools and version control systems out of the box to offer top-notch continuous integration functionality on top of them. With the carefully thought-out UI and tons of innovations, Team City can really make your continuous frustrations become a continuous pleasure.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Herding Code. This episode is being recorded on September 29th, 2010. Tonight, we are talking to Eric Sink, co-founder of SourceGear, maker of fine source control products. And you may have heard recently, Eric was on Hansel Minutes talking a little bit about distributed version control and touched on SourceGear's new distributed version control product, Veracity. But you guys didn't get a chance to go into Veracity too much on that episode, so I thought we'd have you on and we could drill into it in a little more detail. So thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Appreciate the invitation.
So why don't we just start with the obvious question, which is why Veracity? Why another DVCS?
Well, you know, sometimes I flippantly answer that question, why not? A better answer is if you'll allow me to dive into why not just a little bit, I would say it this way. You know, we feel like the DVCS concept is really the future of source control as an industry. And we feel like Git and Mercurial are really just getting us started. I don't think those are going to be the last two DVCSs. And we created Veracity because we wanted to continue in the same trend. Now, that's one way of ducking the question, or it's not intentional, but it really is the case that we see a lot of potential in the future here, and we just want to be a part of it. For the sake of not ducking the question, I would just say this. Git and Mercurial are a really cool start for DCS in terms of them going mainstream. But we see them as designed for the early adopter market, designed for the geek market. To some extent, they're designed for people like us. You in general will not hear me bash Git, Mercurial, or Bazaar for that matter, which I sometimes forget to include, but I have respect for as well, because I am an admirer of these tools. And we did not create Veracity because we want to bash these tools. However, we also don't think that they are what the enterprise market is going to want in a DVCS. They're just not ready to solve the kinds of problems that that enterprise companies have. And I, even as I say that, I should point out that enterprise companies often have some pretty dorky problems. So that doesn't mean that Git and Mercurial are not cool. But you know, when it comes to things like user authentication and centralized admin and all kinds of things like that, there's a lot of stuff that enterprises want that Git and Mercurial's developers are just not focused on.
Okay, so that leads to the obvious next question, which is, what is different about Veracity? Obviously, you touched a little bit on it there, maybe in a little more detail. What's different at the core, and then, you know, what's different about this surround stuff that an enterprise might want?
You know, in terms of the core stuff, one of the major differences with Veracity is the architecture supports more than just versioned trees. So if you think of a version control tool as primarily designed to track versions of things that are like a file system, a source code tree, or something like that. What we have with Veracity is that we have that capability, and alongside it, we have the capability to version things that are more like databases. Instead of hierarchical trees of files and folders, you have records and fields and constraints. When you get the ability to version those things as well, it opens up a whole new class of applications that you can do DVCS way. So you can do things like your wiki, your bug tracking system, a variety of other applications can all be handled using the same DVCS concepts. I'm not sure I'm explaining this very well, so let me try it another way. So, you know, the bigger company you are, the more you start to talk about application lifecycle management. You got this buzzword going around, ALM. ALM is really, you know, you can think of it as not just version control, but everything else that developers use and everything that anyone uses to interact with developers. Now, that's a really broad definition, but it is essentially what these vendors like Rational, IBM, and Microsoft are selling when they talk about application lifecycle management. It's a very, very comprehensive thing. And almost everything in the ALM suite is database-oriented. It's records, more so than files and folders. The version control of the source code is really the only piece of the puzzle that is file and folder-oriented. Everything else is records and fields. So we wanted to bring the decentralized nature of a DBCS to things that are like records and fields so that you can push and pull change sets for your wiki in the same way that you handle your source code. Now, I'll stop for a minute and ask how well am I explaining this?
Pretty clear so far.
Cool.
So can you clarify a little bit more about what a record is exactly? I mean, are we talking about like relational database kinds of tabular information or is it
something like that? Veracity's data model is not as rich as a full relational database. We don't support things like foreign keys, and you know, it's a little closer to a NoSQL database, but I don't particularly like that bandwagon, so it's not a term that I use. Nonetheless, it is essentially a NoSQL database. Veracity's model of a record is very simple. It's a list of name value pairs. There is a template that defines somewhat of a schema for those records, and there are some constraints that can be applied, and some definition of field types and things like that. Relative to something like SQL, it's rather simplistic. But it's designed that way because unlike a SQL database, we have to be able to support merging of records, which is really the central problem of a DBCS. SQL databases don't have to do that. And since we have to do merging, we have to implement the support for merging into the template and the concepts.
So instead of it like a NoSQL, is this kind of like a Berkeley DB or kind of the file-based key-value pair DBs?
At the very lowest level, Veracity stores things in a way that would be conceptually similar to Berkeley DB. Everything in Veracity is a blob. It has a key, and that's how Berkeley DB works. But in terms of abstraction level, Veracity's notion of a database is actually quite a bit higher than Berkeley DB because it does have records and fields, and Berkeley DB doesn't really have fields. But it's not as rich as SQL Server or Oracle, which has much richer definitions and data types and things like that. It is its own data model, and the reason it has its own data model is that it was pretty carefully designed to be mergeable.
So you had a post recently that was Veracity Technology Overview. I guess not that recently. It was in July. But you mentioned in there that you were using SQLite. Is that what's running that on the back end?
No. SQLite is, well, yes and no. I lied. SQLite is used in a number of ways in Veracity for storing... How can I say this? I mean, we mostly use it when we want to store a lot of something, but we just don't want to create a new file format. So, for example, we use SQLite as an index to find the location of things. It's not our data storage model. However, having said that, Veracity has what we call pluggable data storage models. So all of the details of storage are wrapped in this API, and you can implement the API for a variety of different ways of storing the data. And one of those implementations happens to store everything in SQLite. We did it mostly as a proof of concept. So yes and no. SQLite is not our data storage model, but it is one of our data storage models.
So you were saying that everything is a blob and that you can store more than just files, you can store records. So I'm trying to think then of what, so like if we're talking about a wiki, are different pages than another record that's stored in there, you know, as part of my Veracity data model?
Yeah, this is kind of hard without a whiteboard. If I had a whiteboard, I would be drawing a picture of like layers of abstraction, and the the bottom layer I would draw would be this layer where everything is a blob, and that's the layer where the repo storage layer implementation doesn't really know about the innards of any blob. It doesn't matter what you put in there, it's just bytes. A layer above that is what we call the database layer. And in the code, it's referred to as Zing, Z-I-N-G, which I always say only for people who happen to be looking at the code, because it was a really badly chosen name. it was never intended to be a marketing name. So, but if you're looking for the database stuff in the Veracity code, look for files that have Zing in the name. And that layer is where things are records and fields. And then if I were to draw the layer above that, it would be applications that use that layer. And a wiki is an example of an application. Now, it just so happens that we haven't written a wiki layer yet. It's one of the things on our to-do list. So I'm now talking about stuff that's pure vapor. But when we do a wiki layer, in all likelihood, what we will do is to store it as records and fields, where each page is stored as a record. Another viable way to do it would be to store the thing as version-controlled objects, but you would still need the what I meant to say was version-controlled, like hierarchical files and folders. But you would still need a database to manage some of the extra metadata around a wiki. So, in broad concepts, we still like the idea that Veracity allows you to handle both kinds of data, because a wiki is an application where you would probably want both.
So, a wiki is an example of what might use this record layer. What are some other applications you guys have envisioned?
The one we're working on right now most often is a Scrum module. It's a work item tracking module, but it's one that was designed specifically for Scrum. And so you can think of it as, you have tasks, you have things that are open, closed, you have description, you have the things that a bug tracking system has. And that's the one we're actively developing right now. And it's in rather a constant state of flux. I mean, you'd see it in the nightlies, but you would also see it changing pretty rapidly.
So you mentioned nightlies. I saw that you do make nightlies available. So that's, I mentioned before the call started that I had downloaded a recent nightly and kind of frantically started trying to set it up. And you told me that was not something done in a couple of minutes. Is it what does that look like going through? And if I pull down a nightly, what do I need to do to get it installed?
Well, reciting from memory, because I don't have the build instructions in front of me.
But we don't know, so you can just make whatever up. And
sounds
we
great.
Won't, yeah.
You'll need first of all, you'll need CMake, which is this sort of a meta build system from some guys at Kitware. What we love about CMake is that basically I call it a meta build system because we write a whole bunch of CMake files. And what CMake does is it takes those and generates a build system for something else, like just traditional Unix make files. What we love about CMake is that it will generate Visual Studio project files and Xcode files if you're on a Mac. So it allows us to be very cross-platform. My understanding is CMake is being used by the KDE project right now, which, their needs must be 100 times more complicated than ours. So anyway, bottom line, if you were going to build Veracity, one of the first things you would need is CMake. The second problem you're going to have is, can I assume you're on Windows? If you are, probably, I think our build system for Windows still needs Cygwin, which is something we will eliminate at some point because it causes a fair percentage of Windows developers to make a face like they just ate a bad shrimp. But nonetheless, it currently is a requirement for building Veracity. So you would have to get Cygwin, and then you would have to run this one-time script, which is going to download a bunch of dependencies that Veracity needs. And from then on, building Veracity is actually pretty simple. But those first few steps, you kind of have to walk through the README to get it done.
And that's something where the nightlies are source and you need to build it for your, like, you don't include binaries in there that are pre-built.
That's right. Okay. Currently, what we're giving out is on a nightly basis is what we call nightly snapshots or nightly tarballs. We are not yet distributing any compiled binaries, which I'll confess is somewhat of a philosophical choice. We want to distribute nightly binaries or monthly binaries or whatever when it's closer to being ready for actual use. Right now, the hurdle to try and actually use Veracity is you have to be able to build it. And that seems like just about the right hurdle for people, because if you can get it built, there's a good chance you're patient enough to deal with its current warts and flaws.
That's great. That's like the early with Stack Overflow, that part of the reason that they liked having OpenID was it kept the riffraff out. So
that's, yeah, it makes sense.
Yep.
With like a mandatory 3-day waiting period to buy a gun.
Okay, so we have this record level versioning stuff. What from a file perspective, can you do like a compare and contrast against something like Git for that core, you know, file versioning stuff? What do they have in common? What's different about them?
In general, in terms of file and folder source control, our target is to be on par with Git and Mercurial in most every way. There's going to be a number of things currently that Git and or Mercurial have that we don't. For example, we don't have this this concept of sub-repositories or sub-modules, depending on your terminology. That's planned to be implemented for 1.0, but you would not find it in the code base right now. One thing that will probably not make 1.0 is Git's rebase command, which is something we're interested in. But if you look at the Git and Mercurial communities, you find they have two different cultures with respect to this issue of immutability. And the Git culture is more angled in the direction of rewriting change sets to have clean commits when you push to the central repository. And the Mercurial community wants you to show all your work along the way, like, you know, a sophomore math class. And so the Mercurial community has a doctrine, I would say, of like really strong attention to immutability. Nothing is ever changed. All the steps are always shown. Currently, Veracity, you know, has been developed in more of that Mercurial fashion with a culture of immutability. And for that reason, we don't have a rebase command, because I think if we did, our own team wouldn't use it. So we're currently building mostly things that we dog food. And that means we don't have rebase. But I think we will at some point, because we're not as morally opposed to it as some of the Mercurial guys are. But it's one thing that we do not have and probably will not have for 1.0. I'm trying to think of what else is different. I mean, by and large, the feature set for source control is mostly in place, mostly works pretty well. It's basically on par with Mercurial and Git. What we're focused on right now is just to, you know, continually improving performance. Most of the source control features are done.
So Git and Mercurial, as I understand it, I haven't used Mercurial a lot, but I have sort of slightly different philosophy around branching and how easy branching is to do.
Mm-hmm.
Where does Veracity fall in line with that?
Veracity's branching model is much closer to Git than Mercurial. You know, and even as I say that, I mean, if there were an expert about Git and Mercurial here, they would probably be saying, you know, something like, well, Mercurial has 4 branching models that are supported, and Git probably has 27, being the Swiss Army knife of everything. But the branching models that these things are popular for is Mercurial, when you branch, you create another clone of the repo. In Git, you branch within the repo, and your DAG just ends up with 2 heads or 2 tips. Veracity's current branching model is much closer to Git than Mercurial.
So the question I've got is around hosting, paid or free hosting, because Git and Mercurial are nice as far as DBCS and individual use goes, but I think the real utility from them comes from the community surrounding GitHub and the associated site, and as well as Bitbucket, who just had a gigantic, you know, were acquired by a gigantic corp and now offer unlimited anything and a pony. So I was just wondering, and I know this is like pre-1.0, and you're probably thinking, can we just ship it first before we start talking about giving away hosting or any? But do you have any plans for having a hosted site or a community kind of site surrounding Veracity?
No firm plans to announce. You know, I can say that we think about this a lot. In fact, we think of it even more on days when Atlassian acquires Bitbucket or something like that happens.
We did have a question on that, by the way, from Twitter. So I don't know if you want to comment on that afterwards or whatever. If somebody asked if you had any comments on that specifically.
Oh, sure. I'll answer the first question first. But I mean, in terms of our plans, we know it's important, but we also know that it's getting to the point where GitHub and Bitbucket have a popularity and a life of their own that isn't necessarily where we want Veracity to go. GitHub is very close to being sort of a Facebook for geeks. I mean, it's becoming it's gradually taking on little elements of social networking, which is kind of cool. But it's becoming a community thing. And as a business model, that isn't probably where we want to go. We're a lot more focused on corporate development for, you know, what I would call small companies all the way up to the enterprise. So we're still trying to figure out this whole GitHub social aspect. You know, we know it's really popular, but it's almost getting to the point where GitHub is more popular than Git. And that's just kind of weird. It twists my brain a little bit. You asked about a comment on the Atlassian Bitbucket acquisition. My first remark would be to say that it's funny that we sometimes think of Atlassian as being this big, huge corporation. I don't mean any slander to them because they're way bigger than we are. But man, in the grand scheme of things, they're still pretty darn small. But they're a lot bigger than Bitbucket, so that makes sense. I've been wondering, you know, I don't follow Atlassian that closely. We were Jira users, actually, until we started dogfooding our own work item tracking for Veracity. But I've been wondering what Atlassian would do about the source control issue. And I think now we know. What I think is interesting is that Atlassian and Fog Creek are both sort of playing the add stuff on top of Mercurial angle. And so, you know, the first thing that came to my mind was that, you know, this increases the competitive positioning between Atlassian and Fog Creek. And of course, Atlassian is far, far larger, but Fog Creek is one of those companies that has a great deal more gravity than its size. So I think that that is all going to be very interesting. Now, I also happen to notice that Ben Pollack from Fog Creek posted on Hacker News today saying, no, there's no competitive situation at all. And, you know, I'm not sure how much of that is posturing on his part, but it certainly looks like an interesting competitive situation to me. So that was one of the things that came to my mind.
So given that context, did you at any point consider the angle of, you know, adding all this enterprisey stuff on top of, you know, a Git or a Mercurial? Was that an approach you guys considered?
No, never really gave it much thought. Part of it is that we just felt like the architecture just felt wrong. You know, we wanted to be able to push and pull record-oriented change sets at a very low level. All of the interesting solutions about push and pull, you know, for people are doing distributed bug tracking on top of Git, but what they're doing is they're sticking everything in files and checking in the files. And, you know, we wanted record-oriented data to be a level peer of tree-oriented data. The other problem is that Git and Mercurial are GPL, and we think that for customers, that's going to either scare them or it's going to limit the ways that we can do integration and add value, which is, you know, if you don't mind the tangent, I mean, you know, one of the definitions of an enterprise is an organization that wants everything integrated, even if it shouldn't be. It doesn't matter what you're selling. They want it integrated with the stuff they've already got. And we felt like the GPL would be an obstacle for us to say yes to all the different kinds of integrations that an enterprise would be asking us for. Because they ask, our experience in selling enterprise software is that they ask for some pretty strange stuff sometimes, and they're willing to pay for it. And, you know, we don't want to violate the GPL.
So have you said then what your licensing terms are if they're not GPL?
No, they're the Veracity license is Apache license 2.0.
So Veracity, the core version control engine is Apache open source, obviously.
Right.
And then these other pieces that you're building on top will not be open source. That will be that will be your business, in other words.
Yes, there will definitely be some pieces that are not open source. You know, none of those have been announced. I mean, I can tell you what some of the obvious ones are. I mean, when a company comes to us and says, hey, I love your pluggable storage layer concept, that'll mean I can put all my data in our Oracle warehouse. We're darn well going to charge for the Oracle implementation of our storage layer. I mean, people who put stuff in Oracle are used to spending lots and lots of money. And so we're going to continue that tradition with them. Here's another example. I mean, a server that is designed to support really complex fine-grained control over how push and pull works would probably not be open source. At least the version that makes it easy would not be open source. You know, it may be the case that there'll be situations where the full power is exposed if you're willing to VI a config file, but if you want a GUI for it, you pay the enterprise price or something like that. So a lot of these things haven't been worked out, but definitely the core product is all open source still. I mean, all the core functionality that we've talked about in terms of source control, bug tracking, the Scrum module, that's all open source Apache license.
And will you be accepting patches from the community at some point for the core open source pieces?
I suspect we will at some point. We haven't worked out the details of that yet either. The central question is, are we going to have to require contributor license agreements? Which these days, you know, even most community projects are doing that. And we're not even really a community project. We're a corporate open source project. And we did not go open source so we could get the community to write our software for us. You know, at the same time, we want to be cooperative with the community that's interested enough to contribute a patch. I mean, we, you know, the appropriate response to that is appreciation. So we want to be able to accept patches, but I'll be honest and say we haven't worked out the details yet. And luckily, we are not getting flooded with patches, so we don't have that problem to solve in an urgent fashion just yet.
When we asked on Twitter, you know, do you have any questions? We're talking to Eric Sink about Veracity. Of course, 75% are why there's already get SVN. We talked about that earlier. But as you're explaining it, this is kind of going from like, hearing the words to semi-blowing my mind, thinking about going from DVCS to a whole DVCS plus database, you know, and thinking through that, you know, it's kind of a distributed, I mean, it's the advantages of NoSQL plus DVCS. And so I'm wondering then, I'm thinking through like when there's the applications to be built on top of it, the bug tracking, the wiki and all that. But then there's also so I want to extend it. I want to build something onto it and I need to then query the database or work with the database. So what's that like? How do I work with that?
You know, someday I hope it's easy. right now, I'll be honest, it's hard. But I have the same idea sometimes. I have a list of apps that I want to write on the Veracity database that SourceGear has no business writing, but I think would be really cool. I have this basic opinion that all digital photo management software that I've seen sucks. And one of the reasons that it's all crap is that nobody seems to do a digital photo management package that can handle two computers at one time. I mean, this whole concept of, you know, somebody might want to use the data on more than one computer in a client server fashion. I mean, the whole concept just seems to be absent. So, you know, of course, my thought was, wow, wouldn't it be great to have a software system that can store data of any size and has really fine-grained control over how much of it gets pushed and pulled across from one computer to another? And that sounds a whole lot like Veracity's data layer. So, I mean, I would love to use Veracity's data layer as the basis for a digital photo management software package, but I'm not going to do it because I don't have time. But definitely we see possibilities for this data layer to be used for a wide variety of applications, but the APIs need to be cleaned up and documented and all kinds of stuff has to happen first. So I'm not saying that anybody who tried to do that now would have a really fun experience.
So under the hood, it's all there, but it's people have to be on your team and understand deeply what's going on in order to work with that data.
Yeah, right now that's true. In fact, frankly speaking, the data layer parts of Veracity are the parts I wrote. And it's being used by other people on the team who are building apps on it. And the sheer frequency at which those people come into my office to ask, you know, why the heck did you do this, Eric? You know, there's a fair amount of that still going on.
So, we might be backtracking here a little bit, but one of the milestone in building a compiler is when it can compile itself. And so I was wondering about how long did it take before you were self-hosted, so to speak, where you're able to actually store Veracity within Veracity and make checkouts and use it?
Oh, wow. I'm embarrassed to give the answer, and I'm not even sure how to give it with precision. I can say that Veracity as a project began in like January of 2008, and we started dogfooding, I think it was early 2010. So we were about 2 years in before we got to that point. That said, in my own defense, I will point out that for the first probably 18 months of development, it was only two people. And the team widened after that. So we were making slow progress for a long time. It's also the case that Veracity is written entirely in C. And there is a real cost to that. I mean, we end up with, I think when you write in C, you can end up with some of the highest quality software that there is, but it takes longer to get there. I mean, the last project I did was written in C# on the .NET platform, and the pace of development relative to C is just insane. I mean, you get a lot of, you can do stuff really fast. But, we made a strategic choice to go with C, and it's taken us longer to get there because of it, but we're happy with the result.
So that was definitely one of the questions I had to ask about when I was looking at your technology stack was, obviously there's two questions there. One is C# versus C, and then also C versus C++. You said you're happy with the result. I mean, obviously, I guess C is probably easier to get to work cross-platform than C#, but I don't know. I guess, I'm wondering there, why C?
Primarily because, whenever you ask somebody about a language choice, I should just start by saying that it's not likely that there was a clear, absolute winner. I probably can't convince a C# fan that C was the right choice. But point remains, we chose C for reasons, and I'll give you those reasons. One of them is that C is, you can integrate into anything, because any language can call C. With very few exceptions, languages always have glue that they can make a basic, good old-fashioned C function call. We didn't know when we started the project in how many ways the Veracity libraries were going to be used. We wanted them to be very embeddable, so we chose our license and our implementation language to make sure that the Veracity core library could be embedded anywhere we wanted it to go. And C was the lowest common denominator for us to do that. I think that answers the why C and not C#.
Right.
I probably still owe you an answer on why C and not C++, right?
Only because I'm not really any kind of expert on either of those. But yeah.
The basic answer to that question is I hate C++, and I was in charge.
Fair enough.
So since you've written the entire thing in C, what are the APIs going to be like that developers who are going to write extensions and plugins for this going to be like? Are you going to write, is it going to ship, I guess, let's say, with Ruby libraries that will call those C APIs? Or will that be kind of left up to, we're going to work on that later, where the community will kind of write their own favorite language wrapper or lib?
I suspect that, a lot of those wrappers are going to come from the community. We'll do the ones that are most important to us. The first one, that I should mention is JavaScript. I say that it's all written in C, but the guys doing the web stuff would slap me if they heard me say that, and of course they will because they'll listen to this podcast. But it's actually written in C and JavaScript. There are pieces that are higher level that are written in JavaScript. Veracity integrates the SpiderMonkey interpreter, and we use JavaScript for a number of ways. At first, we used it just for our test suite. We have thousands of unit tests and automated tests and all kinds of stuff like that. That all run every night against the code coverage numbers and stuff. And initially, it was just all JavaScript for that purpose. More and more, it's starting to get used for, as our extension language and a variety of other things. So anyway, so JavaScript is actually a big part of our story. The second two languages that we will do, since I've admitted a heck of a lot of enterprise focus, is that we will do .NET and Java. So if you're coming to Veracity and you want to look at it as a set of libraries and do some custom solutions or whatever, if you're in .NET or Java, we're probably going to be giving you something reasonably polished. Something like Ruby is not going to be so high on our priority list, although, I hope it gets done. I don't have anything against Ruby, but it's also, it's not a language that is a favorite of mine, nor is it a language that we are likely to find a business reason to do before .NET. So that's the answer to that, basically.
I just have to say, from looking at your technology overview post, it's like a list of all the coolest technologies around. This is awesome.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. We're pretty happy with our choices, and I'm not ashamed to say that in my career I've done some projects where I ended up unhappy with the technology stack, and so we paid a lot of attention to the choices we made to try and make sure that we weren't going to have any big regrets.
That's especially interesting considering, like you were saying, you started in 2008. So Yeah. Now, the one thing I'm going to jump in before Scott Kuhn can, I'm going to ask Node.js. That's the one thing he always asks about. I don't see it on the list. It's probably not even applicable. I just had to ask.
Well, not being a real expert on Node.js, I'm hesitant to speak to it, but I will say this. Based on what I understand of Node.js, it's not applicable. But so, for example, we are going to do integration with a variety of web servers. We have the current package has an integrated web server that's just kind of embedded into the command line client for things like push and pull. But we also have a module for integration into IIS on Windows, and we're working on a module for integration with Apache. So, you know, we need these web servers that enterprise people will regard as serious web servers. So, but we're not going to integrate with just everything.
That leads to a next question, which is, what are the pieces of a Veracity system? Like, what are the chunks of software, and where do they live, and how do they talk?
Currently, the main piece is a command line application that we call VV, and it's more or less the case that VV right now is everything. If you type VV serve, it starts listening on a socket and it becomes a server. And then you hit it with a web browser on localhost and you can do all kinds of web things with a pretty UI. If you type VV push, it becomes a client and it talks to some other Veracity server so that it can push change sets over. If you type VV pull, same thing, it's a client. And it does networking stuff. If you type VV commit, then you're operating on your local working directory, just like git commit or hg commit would do. So by and large, everything is contained within VV. It's just that when you VV serve, you're doing something very different than when you type VV commit. Because when you do that, I mean, you bring up a web browser, all of a sudden you've got a big web application with work item tracking and drag and drop support and a web 2.0 UI and all this kind of stuff. So, I mean, we think of our web application as a separate component, even though it's actually all in VV.
What, if anything, do you guys envision being kind of the default client experience? Do you expect people will prefer the command line, which is kind of the Git model, or a Tortoise kind of experience, or Visual Studio plugin? I mean, do you envision kind of a primary interaction point?
Our experience in selling, our previous line of, our current line of products, I should say, is that the Visual Studio plugin is really important for people. So that's definitely in our plans. The Visual Studio plugin for Veracity will probably not be open source. It'll probably be a commercial component we sell, but one that we sell at a pretty low price. The expectation for Windows developers using open source version control tools is a Tortoise-like client, and that is something that we will be including, and it will be included as an open source free component of the system. Me and the project manager just had a little debate and discussion today about whether that's going to make the 1.0 release or not. So I can tell you it's on the bubble, but we want it in.
We had a question from Twitter from Tobin, and he asked what tooling there would be available to migrate from SourceGear, Subversion, other systems into Veracity.
I am not going to promise any such tooling for 1.0. I'll say it that way.
Yep.
We do have a migration script that migrates from Mercurial because that was the tool we used before we dogfooded. It's not a script that we would likely release because we didn't design it to for lots of people to use it and for us to support. So we designed it to be really slow and reliable and not fast. So,
yeah, I mean, with version control, migration slow and reliable is great, right?
Yeah, until you have to answer the support call for why is it taking 3 days.
Sure, yeah.
And, we've done that for SourceGear Vault, of course. We actually have not got a plan for a SourceGear Vault to Veracity migration. We're going to wait and see how many people want that. The basic reality is that we're not sure a lot of Vault customers will want Veracity. They're so different. If you like Vault, you're not likely to like Veracity. And if you're a customer of ours that doesn't like Vault and because it's not enough like Git, well, my goodness, Veracity is great for you. Those are the people who would want a migration tool of some kind. And it's yet to be seen how many of those people there are and whether we should provide one. I suspect we will do so at some point. But by providing the tool, we sort of send the message that Vault is going away, and that's not something we're doing. I mean, we haven't talked about it much here, but you know, the fact is Vault is a continuing product that we're supporting and continuing to improve and add features to, because it is a different market position than Veracity.
So I saw also on your list of tools that you had SVG listed as your, for burndown charts and other web graphics. Had you started on that before knowing that that was going to be supported in IE9, or was that just kind of happy circumstance, or how'd that work out?
The guys doing the burndown charts, okay, I'll just say, I mean, I wasn't coding it. The guys doing it, we're always talking about SVG. I kept hearing all these conversations, you know, with buzzwords flying around. I heard a lot of people saying, oh, it'll be an IE9. So, I mean, I think there was some knowledge of that being applied early on in the design process.
I should warn you, frequent listeners to the podcast know that there's a drinking game. You have to drink whenever John says SVG. So I'm kind of a fan of SVG. So, yeah, go ahead. You knew it was going to be an IE9, or they were saying it was an IE9.
Yeah, there was some knowledge of that, but I wasn't directly involved in the decision, so I can't really say.
One of the other features that's listed for Veracity is exclusive file locks, which is kind of an unusual thing to have in a DVCS. I was wondering if you could talk about how does that work?
One way to say it is it doesn't work very well, which is sort of a flippant response again. But when you have exclusive file locks in a DVCS, first of all, it's just going to have to be a feature that has limited functionality when in a disconnected scenario. You can't have it work the same as it would work in a centralized system. Having said that, we think that by providing some level of functionality there, we can make Veracity a lot more useful for people who have lots of binary files. So we want to provide something pretty basic and something that is probably not in a typical use case. We don't see most users use.
So that seems like something that would be a requirement in an enterprise scenario, which kind of brings up the whole like enterprise. Like that was one of the selling points that I had originally read about when Veracity first came out, was just the whole like, this is something that will work better in enterprise. Things like user tracking and ability to, you know, traceability and that sort of thing. So can you talk about some of those things that are more enterprise focused features of Veracity?
Well, actually I would first say that the file locks thing is not so much about the enterprise. We want it for two things. One is that we want to be able to credibly say that a DVCS can do everything a centralized system can do. I mean, one of the arguments for DVCS is that there really isn't anything that a centralized tool does better. And as long as we don't have any implementation of file locks, that's not really true. Second thing is that number one users of file locks that matter to us are gaming companies. The gaming companies are all using Perforce. And gaming developers are by definition cool, which means they all want to be using Git, but they can't because there's just no way for them to cope without file locks. So we want to give them a way out. But I'm not sure that file locks is really a big enterprise feature. It's really much more about people who have lots of binary assets, and the number one users of that are gaming companies because of all the art they deal with.
So then about, you know, other enterprise features, are there other things that you can do because of differences in your model versus Git or Mercurial?
In terms of enterprise features, I mean, one thing that we think is definitely important to the enterprise is the notion of user accounts and administration of them. Git and Mercurial basically don't have user accounts. I mean, you edit your .dot file and you say, this is who I am. And there's no formal concept of a user account, and there's certainly no administration of them. And that's a pretty important feature for the enterprise. You know, in terms of other things, I mean, if I were to go back briefly and talk about, you know, the mergeability of databases, you know, just to use a little bit of an arcane example, I mean, one of the reasons that we think our model for merging database and record-oriented data is important is because the template can be used to configure how you want the merge to happen. So, for example, let's say you're in an enterprise and you want to have a rule that says the QA team is authoritative on the priority of a bug. So if two people change the priority, you can write a template that says if two people change it, a guy wins. And that can be one way of handling the merge resolution. This kind of template-driven configuration we think is pretty important for enterprises who are very often want the tool to reflect some particular process that they designed, and they want to make sure that everything can be configured just the way they want it. And so that's one of the things that we wanted to do with Zing, is make sure that configuration ability was there at a very fine-grained level.
Just going back to something we briefly touched on before, we talked a little bit about migration from other version control platforms. But one of the interesting things about Git is the whole Git SVN thing, where you know Git can sort of integrate with an existing SVN system, and it's sort of a backdoor into using Git locally, but not if you don't have the ability to change your corporate SVN system, but you still want to use Git as your local engine. Would you see something like that for Veracity?
Definitely. It's not something we've got right now. We love the concept. We were daydreaming about this concept an awfully long time ago. I'm not sure if it was before Git SVN came out or not, but we would call it adapters. And we were sort of daydreaming about how cool it would be to have adapters where you can wrap one system in the interface of another. So it's not something we've got right now, but it's a concept we really like.
Just the fact that you got Spider Monkey, building on a regular basis and reliably is amazing to me.
Found a Spider Monkey fan, did I?
Every time I've tried.
You found the Spider Monkey fan.
Man, every time I've tried, I've just gotten into dependency hell, tracking down libs and everything else on Linux, at least.
It's a pretty tricky build system, and try doing it on three platforms. It's even worse.
Yeah. I guess that would be one question. Why did you go with SpiderMonkey versus TraceMonkey or V8, or would you switch if you had the chance? But that's more of a technical, in-the-weeds kind of question.
Well, once the team gets the grand integration between JaegerMonkey and TraceMonkey all finalized, we will make the switch. We wanted to go with that engine over something like V8, largely just because we had some familiarity with it. We were comfortable with its API. It's C instead of C++. But we do plan to switch to the next major version of it when it comes out.
I've got a question that I guess doubles back to a question I asked earlier, and you can throw it out if you want. but I'm curious, for some of this, it seems like it's at least technically possible to run this all using a .NET stack, using Mono across Linux and Mac and Windows. And so I'm just wondering if that was something that you guys had looked into, or if it's something that your team has ever looked into and, it hasn't worked out or whatever.
We certainly gave it some consideration. For as much respect as we have for Mono, I mean, we've used it some as a solution for Vault, and so we know its limitations pretty well. We just wanted more portability. I mean, it sounds strange to say it because, Mono is running everywhere. We spent a lot of the last 5 years selling a Java-based package that provides cross-platform support for Microsoft Team Foundation Server. It was called TeamPrize, and we actually sold that division to Microsoft. And we learned a lot about what enterprises want from portability. And, this may seem strange, but when we got requests for TeamPrize to be ported to an IBM mainframe, it changed our worldview a little bit on enterprise portability. It was really weird. And I don't see Mono supporting the ZOS mainframe anytime soon. So there again, it was really just we wanted a lightweight core that we felt confident we could take anywhere we needed to take it, and C is what gave us that. So that's the choice we made.
So I've got one kind of tangential question, which was on your list of on your technology overview list. You listed Scrum, and I've always been happy with Scrum. And I threw this out on Twitter because I was like, who doesn't like Scrum? And a bunch of people said, yeah, we hate Scrum. And so I just kind of wondered, Scrum's working well for you?
Yeah, it is. We're a little bit new to Scrum. I mean, it's not like we've been doing this for 5 years. We started doing Scrum when we started doing Veracity, and so we're learning as we go. But, by and large, the process is working pretty well for us, and we're just continually trying to get better at it.
And as I was telling John on Twitter, I think that's the main point of any agile, kind of project system, is that there's the idea of continuous improvement. So you're not just spinning to see the burn down charts, turn pretty colors and go down at the end. You're being honest and doing retrospectives and moving forward and saying, okay, what worked, what didn't work, and so forth. And we'll probably have a whole other show just on Scrum and God help us, Agile.
I think that seems like a good idea because, I've worked on small teams where everyone was really motivated to ship the product, and Scrum seemed to work well, but I could see where it might not work well if you have a you know, if there are other enterprise factors that are, you know, fighting against that, maybe.
Well, it's, you know, like I said, it's definitely been a good experience for us, partly because it's just always fun to learn something new. But it seems to be just about the right level of process for our particular team. What I find interesting is, you know, what we keep hearing from people in the enterprise world is that the enterprise is really interested in Agile right now. I mean, there's a number of companies right now. I mean, if you can just take your product and spray a coat of Agile on it, you know, it sort of makes your product a lot more palatable to the enterprise right now, because that's what's hot among the buyers, which is not a strategy I necessarily recommend, but it's just an interesting view into that world right now.
Okay. I think I'm out of questions. Anybody else?
I don't know if you want to talk about Mosaic. You probably have enough that you're you're sick of it.
Yeah. Well, it's that's a long time ago. I don't get asked about that so much anymore.
You're talking to a bunch of browser geeks. We love browsers, and you know, so we like go create, like, for us, Christmas is the day that anyone ships a new browser. So do you follow browsers deeply still? I mean, do you get excited about new releases of browsers?
Sort of. You know, it's kind of strange. I mean, I'm actually a Chrome user right now. To me, the browser is so different from what it was in 1995 when we were all doing this that, you know, it almost feels like it's just a completely different piece of software. you know, it's, people are doing things with browsers that are just, you know, that would blow my mind. If you showed them to the 1995 Eric, I would have just freaked out. So, I don't follow browsers the way I did back then, I'll say it that way.
I remember seeing something where somebody had built like a 5K challenge JavaScript, what can you do thing, and someone was using XBM. And I remember kind of, I don't know if it was your blog or something, but I was tracing it back and seeing that, you know, this XBM image format was like way back in the day. And it finally, like, I had this huge post I was going to write about, you know, here's XBM and here's how we can do an inline captcha and all this stuff. And then pretty much immediately after that, whichever version of IE just shipped removed XBM support. So.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, some of that stuff, I mean, we did XBM, XPM. And, you know, the one that really caught my eye recently was, I think, I don't remember which one it was, but like the last browser that supported Gopher removed the feature. And of course, you know, we had to have Gopher in our browser way back then. It's just really funny that it lasted this long, because it was in the last few months that Gopher finally went away.
Wow.
Okay, one last question. Do you see Microsoft? I mean, obviously Microsoft is a big enterprise version control system player. Do you see Microsoft getting into this DBCS space? Are you worried about them as a competitor?
I would say I'm not worried about it. You know, when talking about Microsoft, it's probably best most of the time for me to just quote public sources. So I can say that Brian Hay, the head of the TFS team at Microsoft, has publicly stated an interest in adding DBCS features to Microsoft Team Foundation Server. So it's definitely an interest of theirs. It's definitely a direction they're going. I don't think there's been any formal announcements of features or releases. Similar announcements have been made by the guys at Rational. In general, we like those announcements because we like to see that the biggest players in the game are seeing the same momentum that we see, and we're excited about that. At the same time, you know, it's our belief that taking a centralized system and trying to turn it into a DBCS is just really not possible. So we feel like these guys, you know, with leading centralized systems, if they're going to try and go the DBCS way, they're going to have to make some compromises, and those compromises will create market opportunities for smaller players like us. So, you know, we're happy with how it's all looking.
It almost seems kind of like the Codeplex putting a Subversion layer on top of, you know, a TFS, and it's like you don't get all the goodness by just trying to, you know, build a layer onto something. Like it really takes a rethinking, right?
Yeah, I mean, these systems are so fundamentally different at the core. Now, that's not to say that, you know, the TFS team, they can look at the use cases. They can look and say, okay, disconnected development. How can we address disconnected development for our product without being a DBCS? They can bring some of the benefits of a DBCS to their product in different ways. It doesn't make their product a DBCS, but it makes the benefits relevant to their users.
So you kind of described yourself as a smaller player, and with the rise of the internet, that's kind of turned into this vast array of niche markets where you don't have to you don't have to capture the entire market. You just have to get enough that you can, you know, pay your people, live comfortably, you know, maybe you get rich, maybe you don't. And so I'm kind of wondering what's your definition of success for Veracity kind of look like right now?
Definition of success for Veracity. I mean, I guess I'll give it at two levels. You know, one is if we never make a dime on it, I still hope the open source version of Veracity becomes loved and adored by many, many users. It would be almost like delusion of grandeur to say that I hope it's as popular as Subversion, because, you know, that's just nuts. Subversion is insanely popular. But I daydream about that. You know, I think, you know, I want to create something that people actually use, and that excites me. The business answer to the question is that we have been about a 25-employee company for most of our company's history, and I would love for Veracity to be the product that helps us break through to the next level and get to, you know, 50, 75 employees. You know, that's that sign of growth, and to be able to do that growth in a prudent and safe fashion would be a real success for Veracity as a business product. So, you know, there's two different answers to the question, but we definitely have pretty high ambitions for where this product can go.
Okay, well, I think we've talked until Mr. Sink has started losing his voice, so perhaps we should let you go, Eric. So thanks a lot for coming on the show. Good luck with the Veracity project. I look forward to seeing a release that I can start to play around with.
Very good. Well, once again, thank you. This has been a lot of fun. I appreciate the invitation and the chance to talk with you guys tonight.
Join us next time for another episode of Herding Code.